John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, July 16th, 2012. A human rights investigation team arrives in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Authority to receive $100 million in direct aid from Saudi Arabia. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. An 11-member team from the United Nations Human Rights Commissioner's Office arrived in Gaza to investigate human rights abuses in the Palestinian enclave. The siege of Gaza is now in its fifth year, and all supplies of medicine, water, and fuel are strictly limited by Israel. In other news from Gaza, the Nelson Mandela Foundation for Political Prisoners has urged the UN to investigate human rights violations in Israeli jails. Israel routinely transfers prisoners from the occupied territories to jails inside Israel, a practice which violates the Fourth Geneva Convention. In a concession won by prisoners on hunger strike, Israel allowed prisoner visits to 25 inmates from Gaza. There are currently 1,200 Palestinian families unable to visit relatives held by Israel. In Tikwa, near Bethlehem in the southern West Bank, Israeli soldiers assaulted and abused Mahmoud al-Baden, 17, after breaking into his home. They then kidnapped him before driving away to an undisclosed location. Mohammed, the child's father, reported that the soldiers violently searched the property before taking Mahmoud outside. They then started punching, kicking, and hitting him in front of their home. Elsewhere in the West Bank, the Israeli military said that a UN agency's humanitarian aid to displaced Palestinians is actually illegal. Human rights workers state that providing temporary tents to families whose homes have been demolished falls under universally accepted international definitions of emergency humanitarian assistance and is not a building project that would require a permit. In political news, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton arrived in Tel Aviv today to meet with the Israeli leadership. The talks are expected to focus on Iran, Egypt, and the stalled peace talks with Palestinians. In a bid to ease the current financial crisis facing the Palestinian Authority, Saudi Finance Minister Ibrahim Al-Assaf informed Palestinian Prime Minister Dr. Salam Fayyad that King Abdullah ordered the transfer of $100 million to help alleviate the financial crisis in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Israel and the U.S. have imposed financial sanctions on the PA due to recent bids for recognition with UN organizations. The Palestinian Authority was able to pay only 60% of June's salary to around 160,000 civil servants. A source at the Palestinian Ministry of Finance said the remainder of the due salaries will be paid as soon as the Saudi grant is wired. According to the Minister of Finance, Dr. Nabil Qassis, this is the hardest financial crisis the Palestinian Authority is facing since the 2006 crisis, when donor countries stopped aid to the Palestinian Authority after Hamas took over the elections and formed the government. And that's all for today from IMEMC News. This was the Monday, July 16th Daily News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Qassis and me, Kelly Joyner.
Afghanistan, 14th of July. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 16th of July. NATO is reporting the deaths of two soldiers of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 13th of July. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 14th of July. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from a non-combat related injuries in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Is this yet another electrocution in an unsafe shower, or yet another GI suicide? Afghanistan, 14th of July. A suicide bomber killed a prominent anti-Taliban politician and 22 other guests at a wedding reception in the northern Afghan province of Samagan. The bomber hugged lawmaker Ahmed Khan Samagani, then blew himself up. The blast also killed the provincial intelligence chief and a senior police commander. Samangani was close to Uzbek warlord Abdul Rashid Dostum and commanded thousands of men in the area. Afghanistan, 15th of July. Taliban fighters attacked 12 NATO oil tankers carrying fuel for U.S.-led forces in eastern Afghanistan, according to Press TV. Afghan officials said that one driver was killed and four security guards were wounded late on Sunday when the militants set the tankers on fire Syedabad District, Border Province. Still think reopening the attack-plagued route from Pakistan was a good idea? Mr. Barack Obama, none of this has gotten any easier for U.S. forces during your time in office. Delaying withdrawal until 2014 may save the election, but it means two more years of war and death. Now's the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. In Seattle, on the 10th of July, a police SWAT team smashed down the door of a home in which members of Occupy Seattle and the Red Spark Collective lived. They stormed in throwing concussion grenades like they expected all-out armed resistance, the kind they would have gotten in Afghanistan. According to a report posted to www.occupywallstreet.org, a neighbor reported, quote, "Suddenly we heard the bang of their grenade and crashing as the police entered the apartment. The crashing and stomping continued for a long time as they tore the place apart. When it was over, nobody had been arrested, and the search warrant papers listed only anarchist material and clothing worn at a May Day protest as the items to be searched for and stolen. Nobody was arrested, as it is not illegal to be an anarchist. In exactly one way, the residents of this home were lucky. They were not suspected of being Muslims. Had they been Muslims, the SWAT team might have opened fire on sight, and everyone would have been arrested without charges. I wonder how those pigs in the SWAT team would like to try that in Afghanistan, where they would face powerful and effective resistance. Still, this raid indicates, while first they came for the Muslims, then they came for environmental and animal rights activists, and now they are coming for the Occupy movement and anarchists. Will they come for you tomorrow if you don't vote a straight GOP ticket and have a perfect attendance record at work and at a fundamentalist church? On the 16th of July, Greenpeace activists managed to blockade and shut down a total of 74 Shell gas stations in London and Edinburgh in Britain. They were protesting Shell's plans to conduct BP-style offshore oil drilling in the Arctic, off places like the northern coast of Alaska, where the kind of response that kept BP's Macondo oil spill would take not 2 months, but a full year, if it was possible at all, with the remnants of the fast-melting polar ice in the way. Here is part of the report posted by The Guardian. Quote, "Protesters have scaled the roof of the Shell station on Queenstown Road near Battersea Park in London and on Dalreep Road in Edinburgh, with police and fire crews attending the scene in Edinburgh. Activists arrived at the Battersea Park branch at 6:45 a.m. and used the station's barriers to close down the forecourt. They have since covered the Shell sign with a Save the Arctic banner and positioned a life-size polar bear model on the station's roof. The activists are shutting down the stations by using an emergency shutoff switch to stop fuel going to the pumps and then removing a fuse to delay it being switched on again. The organization has since posted a picture of an activist removing one of the fuses to Shell's head of Arctic drilling with a message, quote, "We're being careful not to destroy property. Even the carefully removed components will go back to Shell. Unfortunately, any oil spilled in the Arctic by Shell won't be so carefully put back underground."
The year 2012 is on track to be the hottest in recorded history, while high temperatures and drought conditions have been linked to destructive forest fires and other natural disasters that are exactly the kinds of occurrences that climate scientists have predicted will come with global warming. Yet the June Rio Plus 20 United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, which commemorated the first Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil in 1992, was widely criticized as a failure for producing an international agreement which lacks enforceable commitments to confront and reverse climate change. Mark Hertzgard, author of Earth Odyssey, reports on the environment for The Nation magazine, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, and other publications. His newest book is titled Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth, which he wrote for his daughter's generation. Hertzgard says after his daughter Kiara was born 7 years ago, he became even more adamant about addressing climate change and holding to account the political and business leaders who ignore the Earth's and its people's plight. In his book, he notes that climate change has arrived almost a century ahead of predictions. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Mark Hertzgard about the worsening weather and environmental conditions connected with climate change and a new group he's organizing called Climate Parents.
We are living with climate change now. It is going to get worse simply because of the inertia, the physical inertia of the climate system, the fact that carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for decades after it's emitted. So we've got a big job ahead of us, there's no doubt. And meanwhile, we've got the President of the United States not saying a word about global warming, even though he knows perfectly well what the science tells him. We don't see any real leadership coming from the national level. So I think it really is going to, as always in history, it's really going to rely on people from the bottom organizing together and forcing their leaders to do what's right. And that's something that I'm getting started now with a group called Climate Parents. We want to try and organize and mobilize parents around the climate issue because it certainly endangers, climate change endangers the thing that we all hold most dear in our lives, which is our kids.
Say more about Climate Parents.
Climate Parents is a new group that a number of us are just beginning now. And its agenda is simple. We think that parents are the single most underorganized constituency on climate change, which is quite bizarre when you think of what's at stake for our kids. And so what we want to do is to give voice and political impact to parents across the country and across the partisan political spectrum. We don't believe that climate change should be a partisan political issue because we think all parents want to have a safe and healthy future for their kids. But we also think that dealing with the climate issue now is part of your job description as a parent, just like providing your kid with proper food and clothing and shelter and health care and all those things. Climate change and dealing with it is now part of the job description of being a parent because we now know that my daughter, Kiara, who's 7 years old, she and the rest of her generation are now fated to spend the rest of their lives coping with what will be the hottest and most volatile climate in the 10,000 years of human civilization. So you can think of today's young people as what I call Generation Hot. And we owe it to them, having put them in this predicament. We owe it to them as their parents, their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, anyone who cares about young people. We owe it to them to try and find the ways to let them cope with this problem successfully. And let's emphasize here, we know how to deal with climate change. We have the solutions. We know what to do technologically. It's all there, solar and wind power and geothermal and energy efficiency and all of the other solutions. I go into them in great depth in my book, Hot. That's not the problem. The problem is the lack of political will and the fact that our government is still under the control of very large business interests who profit from the current situation. The oil companies, the coal companies, natural gas. I mean, it is remarkable and bizarre that our tax dollars are now being spent in the billions to subsidize ExxonMobil, the single richest, most profitable corporation in human history. We are subsidizing them to wreck the climate for our kids.
Mark Hertzgard, so this is a group to apply political pressure on officials.
We do think that it does have to be political involvement. It's nice and it's important as a first step for a family to change their lifestyle choices and their consumption patterns so that maybe you take mass transit more often than the car, maybe you eat less meat, more vegetables, and take the bicycle and all of these sorts of, there's a lot of personal lifestyle changes that you can make, and those are useful, but they are much, much less than what is necessary to solve this problem. As long as we have an economic system and rules of the road economically that essentially allow carbon dioxide pollution to be emitted for free, nobody pays a price for that, certainly not the corporations or us, the consumers. It's not incorporated into the price. Indeed, as I said, we're subsidizing oil and coal and natural gas. As long as that's the case, we can't make much difference. We've got to change the main drivers of climate change, and those are the government policies and the business practices of today's world. We can do this. We know how to do this. It's a matter of changing the big political decisions, and that requires people to get involved in politics. I know for some people that's about as enticing a prospect as getting a root canal, but I just would remind you, especially if you're a parent or a grandparent, that, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't really feel like doing, but we do them because they will make a difference for our kids.
That was journalist and author Mark Hertzgard. Learn more about his group, Climate Parents, and the effects of climate change on weather and the environment by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
In the aftermath of week-long power outages caused by the June 29th Derecho storms, the union representing Pepco's linemen is blaming short staffing for the length of the power outages. IBEW 1900 President Jim Griffin says, quote, "Staffing, especially of linesmen, is half of what it was 20 years ago. These are the folks that are vital to keeping the lights on, and we've just been decimated." He blames the switch to out-of-state contract workers for further aggravating matters, saying, quote, "They're here today and gone tomorrow, leaving us to pick up the pieces." As of right now, Pepco and Local 1900 are negotiating a new contract. Maybe now it's time to put the squeeze on Pepco. What with the millions of dollars in salary, Pepco CEO Joe Rigsby was paid for last year's performance. Hey Pepco, cutting linemen while global warming brews up more and bigger storms is just another form of climate change denial. Is that why you keep buying electricity generated with coal from mountaintop removal mines, too? Burn up the tar sands. Would they say that we were dumb? Walking in your footsteps.
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 You may remember the November 19th 2011 takeover of Franklin School at 13th and K Streets by Free Franklin, supported by Occupy DC. On the 12th of July, the defendants from the civil disobedience case who had taken their cases to trial, having been convicted but received sentences only of a $50 payment to the Victims of Crimes Fund, 5 days suspended jail time, and 3 months unsupervised probation, gathered in front of Franklin School to speak about the occupation of the site of the former Franklin shelter for the homeless that former Mayor Fenney closed in 2008.
This is about the people versus the money. We are on K Street, where what used to be the Franklin Homeless Shelter is in back of us. K Street, of course, is where the billions of dollars come in to corrupt the people who pretend to be our leaders. And so I guess they figured that that was a bad place to have regular people or homeless people or people who don't have a lot of money running around. So they decided to close the Franklin shelter. The Franklin shelter, on one rainy September day in 2008, was suddenly closed at 6 a.m. The people driven out into the street, many of them without their belongings, while police with megaphones shouted at people to stay away, and people not knowing what to do stayed in the rain the entire weekend. many of them without their gear, many of them losing a lot of their positions on the way. But that didn't matter, of course, because they were people who without a lot of money, and we decided that we were going to reopen the Franklin shelter.
Yeah.
And we were up there, as we have admitted in court. We dropped the incriminating banner, as we admitted in court. And the reaction of the crowd below when we did that was tremendous. We knew we had done the right thing. When we heard the cheers and the applause, and I guess the hope from the crowd that, once again, as was done in 2002 and 2003, we would be able to open this shelter in the middle of the city. When the police came, we still had a crowd. The reaction was very endearing. Everything from people throwing themselves under fire engines to standing in front of fire engines to, once we were taken off the roof, throwing themselves on the hoods of a paddy wagon. We waited about 8 months for a trial.
We were found guilty of unlawful entry today. And I think that despite the fact that that was probably a direct result of the fact that our judge did us a grave disservice in not allowing us to fully use the good faith belief argument that we actually, the 13 of us originally, actually believed that we had a right, that we had the authority of the community to enter this building, this publicly owned building.
And unfortunately, the jury followed instructions, as people still are doing today. People are following way too many instructions from a government that has shown itself both incompetent and undeserving to rule.
I think that we used our right to a jury trial the way that it's supposed to be used, which was to get the information and get to the root of the problem that we were discussing to people that otherwise would not have been exposed to it. And even though we were found guilty of unlawful entry, I believe that the only thing we're guilty of is that we went into the Franklin School, previously the Franklin Shelter, on November 19th, and pointed out to the DC government that they're not doing their job by refusing to meet the needs of the community. And I believe that that's the real reason why we were found guilty and slapped on the wrist with 3 months of probation, no community service because we already serve our community, and $50 for the Victims of Crime Fund, which I'm happy to pay into. But also know that I'm doing my part to prevent that real crimes happen, which is the crimes of corruption in government, the crimes of the fact that, you know, corporations and private developers are prioritized in our city versus low-income people, in particular low-income people of color. So I'm really proud to have been part of the 13 people that helped to bring this issue to light. And though specifically we were here at this historic building that stands as a beam of hope for the hundreds upon hundreds of homeless men that used its services before, I believe that the real issue is that the Franklin School is just one of the many buildings in our city that aren't being used to meet the needs of the community. And so until that happens, I hope that more people take the example of, instead of waiting for solutions from above, from elected officials who clearly aren't listening to their constituents, that they show, but that they, you know, invoke action, and that they model what they want to see the city be like.
I myself was not happy with the guilty verdict. It was clear to me that at least four people on the jury were in our favor, did believe in what we were doing, and didn't believe that we had broken any laws whatsoever, even in the system's belief of what the crime was that we had committed. I do feel that due to the judge constantly stopping us from saying what we had to say, trying to stop us from getting our political beliefs, and also her very strict telling of what the jury could and could not deliberate about, I think affected our affected the jury's decision, and pretty much set us up to get a guilty verdict. I feel that this is just one of the many problems going on in D.C. right now and across the country, where too many times the system is scared to allow people to empower themselves, get the politics out, allow themselves to go out there, take the steps they need to take when the government doesn't.
And I find it very hard to believe that they are going to successfully sell this building to a developer. I think the resistance of the people will prevent that from happening. People will fight that. So until it's back as a homeless shelter where it belongs, it's probably going to stay abandoned, a symbol of the stupidity of government.
The intersections of Euclid and Champlain Streets in Adams Morgan, a developer is planning to build a 10-story luxury hotel. To do so, they plan to demolish the building containing the city paper and WPFW Pacifica Radio, and tear down multiple low-income apartment buildings, displacing over 220 people, as bad as the Deauville fire, many of these folks Latino families of Native American descent. That means this proposal is a direct continuation of the Indian Wars, in which greedy newcomers drove Native American people, long-standing residents, from their homes and have been continuing to do so over the last 520 years. On the 14th of July, activists and area residents staged an affordable housing tour and movie night in the park across from the proposed hotel, showing how-to movies on the kind of tenant organizing that has saved other buildings in the neighborhood from similar development proposals. Here's what some people had to say in front of one of the threatened buildings.
Another 15 units, that's another 45, 50 people. That building right there is another 25 units, that's another 100 people. So we're talking just on this block. We're not talking about other blocks over here. Just on this block, we're talking about 200 potentially people being displaced by this hotel project.
That's as bad as the fire.
Estamos hablando que hay un edificio aquí con 15 unidades y otro edificio que con 45 units, más 45 unidades. Van a ser más de 200 familias que se van, y este edificio más de 200 familias que van a sacar de aquí para hacer este hotel para los ricos.
Benito. Aquí estamos de la bicicleta para abajo.
Okay. De todos los trabajadores.
Sí. So this is why we're here today. We've gathered to just start beginning to talk about this. We're a little late in the game, but we need to organize quickly.
Estamos un poquito atrasados en el proceso, pero tenemos que organizarnos rápidamente, ya, rápidamente.
All of this is going to displace all the people that have been here for many years. This is not fair. This is not what we want. We don't want a hotel here. We want a job training center. We want a community center. That's it.
The resident, the folks down here at the corner fought for their housing back in the late 90s. They said when the developer came in, right there, Champlain in Colorama, when the developer came in, to push them out when they were doing all this, before all this development came, the folks said, no, we will not be moved. And they're still there.